WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? It is Monday, June 29, 2015, and you are locked into Current Sports with me, Al Martin. We've got a great show in store for each and every one of you out there listening. Of course, we'll chat about the Detroit Tigers and their weekend set against the Chicago White Sox that ended in thrilling fashion. Also, Tyus Battle exploring other options. We'll discuss what teams he's looking at and whether or not he will recommit, quote-unquote, to the Michigan Wolverines. Also, I'll be inviting Mark Snyder, Detroit Free Press Michigan football and basketball writer, to talk about the football and basketball programs in the world of recruiting and, of course, talk about the Jim Harbaugh hoopla. All of that and so much more, also including weekend winners. As we recap the weekend that was in the world of sports, our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Monday, June 29th. On June 19th, five-star guard Tyus Battle, who was ranked number 19 overall in the 2016 class, according to the 247 Sports Composite, decommitted from Michigan for the first time since changing his mind on June 19th and reopening his options. The elite 2016 wing, again ranked number 18 overall by Scout.com, explained his thought process, saying, quote, "My whole family just wanted to look at other schools and other options," Battle told Scout.com. Quote, I still really like Michigan a lot. I'm just looking at other schools and other options. We'll have more discussion on where we will see Tyus Battle during his college basketball career as I chat with Mark Snyder, Michigan beat writer for the, of course, football and basketball teams for the Detroit Free Press. Don't miss that chat in just a sec. All right, Michigan State's latest reported transfer target is headed elsewhere. Pascal Chukwu, a 7'2" center transferring from Providence, has committed to Syracuse, according to reports from CBS Sports and the Daily Orange. Now, the commitment comes on the heels of a weekend visit. Michigan State was one of several schools to show interest in Chukwu, and he reportedly took a visit to East Lansing earlier this month. Former Detroit Cass Tech football player Kayvon Sardin died in a car crash over the weekend, according to an aunt. Now, Sardin, who was a slot back, running back, and kick returner, had committed to play at Siena Heights in the fall. Details of the crash remained incomplete on Sunday night. Oh, hate stories like that. All right. Detroit Tigers, folks. Victor Martinez's game-tying, bases-clearing double in the eighth set up catcher James McCann's walk-off home run in an inning later as the Tigers beat the Chicago White Sox 5-4 on Sunday afternoon at Comerica Park. McCann said afterward, "Surreal. I knew that when I got to home plate, I had to jump and give Miggy a high five because the last time I missed him," talking about the last time he hit a walk-off. "So I knew I had to connect on the high five, but other than that, I don't even really remember." How about that? As McCann afterwards talking about the celebration and rounding the bases. Now, the Tigers are 6.5 games in back of the AL Central leading Kansas City Royals. Justin Verlander won't be the only big name on the mound on Tuesday at Comerica Park. Michigan football coach Jim Harbaugh will throw out the first pitch before the Tigers series opener against the Pittsburgh Pirates, his team said today. Harbaugh was hired as the U of M head coach of U of M football in late December. DJ Davis, he lashed a go-ahead two-run double in the eighth, giving the Lansing Lugnuts a 7-5 win over the West Michigan Whitecaps Sunday at Cooley Law School Stadium. Davis's double against Joe Jimenez helped Lansing earn a series split with the Whitecaps after the Lugnuts dropped the first two games of the series. Well, today is the day, folks. The 2015 Hockey Hall of Fame class will be announced today in Toronto, where the selection committee meets. Now, we can elect up to 4 male players, 2 female players, 2 builders, and 1 referee/linesman. Now, players must be retired 3 years to be eligible. Red Wings, Nicholas Lidstrom, and Sergei Fedorov are eligible for the first time. Wing Chris Osgood for the second time. And Team USA icon Angela Ruggiero, formerly of Harper Woods, for the very first time. All right. And LeBron James will bypass his $21.6 million option with the Cleveland Cavaliers and become a free agent on July 1st. Now, the move, which was expected, marks the third time in the past 6 years that James will be an unrestricted free agent. This time, he is expected to have a different outcome as James intends to re-sign with his current team. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. The phone lines are open 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Shoot me a comment there. I'll read it live here on the airwaves. Or you can even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Without further ado, folks, I do believe it's time to start the show. Beautiful people, welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Was that not fun to watch? Oh my goodness. James McCann taking it to the house. A walk-off win. That's how it's done, baby. Oh boy, that was fun to watch. Welcome to the show, folks. We got a fabulous show to start the week for you. Of course, this is a holiday week. Can you believe that it's almost July? Wow, July 4th is this Saturday. I really hope you guys have a great one out there. Safe travels to those traveling, getting out of town, getting away from Michigan. Again, safe travels, be safe, and celebrate safely among family and friends. I always gather with my family each and every July 4th as we barbecue, invite a ton of people over. We open up the pool, my mom does, and we pop fireworks later on in the day. And every single year, I feel like every year I've been here at WKAR's Current Sports, the Monday following July 4th weekend, I'm always seeing at least 3 or 4 stories when it comes to fireworks mishaps. So be safe, folks. That's all I'm saying. But I'm definitely excited to go back to Detroit later on in the week to see the fam. And I trust you are excited about this week as well. But hey, I'm more excited to be with you guys right here on WKAR's Current Sports. You know what? Over the weekend, when I was powwowing and, you know, getting some things ready for this week, I came across an interesting milestone here on the show. It did not occur to me until Saturday around 2 o'clock When I was doing prep, I mean, you know, Saturday was a really rainy day. All I did was really just stay in my apartment with my dog and just kind of plan, do some work, watch a lot of TV, watched a few movies here and there, caught up on some TV shows. And amongst all of that, while I was preparing for this week's show, I saw that the 500th, I kind of had an out-of-body experience as soon as I said that, but the 500th current sports radio show is tomorrow. Are you kidding me? This is show number 499. I can't believe that, folks. It's been now a little over 2 years since I walked through the doors of WKAR, and I just can't believe. I still remember, you know, show numero uno like it was yesterday. I mean, sitting here, never really doing radio before, but I'm sitting across, you know, the very first guest, you know, paying homage to the man who was a part of laying the foundation for sports talk here at WKAR. And long time presence here and voice through your speakers right here on these airwaves, Earl Robinson, sort of a Passion of the Torch episode, as Earl sat across from me and I picked his brain and he weighed in on many sports topics. And now, from that moment to where we are right now, embarking on episode number 500. I mean, first off, I just want to say, and I'm not going to say anything right now. I'm going to save all of my thank yous and all of my gushy speech for tomorrow's show, which should be a doozy. And I won't let the cat out the bag on who we have coming on. But just know a few blasts from the past are expected, especially one who recently said goodbye to WKAR's current sports and is now doing some fantastic things in the city of Detroit. So you do not want to miss that. But I want to invite our fantastic engineer right here on WKAR's current sports right now, Isaac Constance. How you doing, Isaac?
Oh, I'm doing well. Much like you, Saturday was an off day for me. Just did absolutely nothing. Literally.
Didn't it feel good,
nothing.
Though, to do nothing? It felt good just to just, you know, because we're so busy, man. It just felt good to just to plop out on the couch and just literally do nothing.
Yeah, it does. Just decompress, let all the stress wash and just float away. It was great. But Sunday was absolutely beautiful outside.
It was.
And, you know, I told you when we had Derek Blaylock, the cyclist who rode from East Lansing to Indianapolis to raise funds for his foundation, mm-hmm. I did a little bit of that myself as well. But I hadn't rode since October because the winter and then my wheels got flat and
one of
the tubes popped. It was just so much worse work, but Sunday.
sounds like my old 99 Buick, Isaac. Man, that's crazy, man. All right.
Yeah, Sunday, though, I unpacked it, and I got back on the road. So I rode about 30 miles, 2.5 hours.
Whoa.
It was fun. So.
Hold on, 30 miles, 2.5 hours on a bike?
It's not that bad if you have a nice bike. And
whoa.
I'm hoping more than 30 miles, my speedometer/odometer wasn't really working. So I'm hoping more than that, which is a conservative estimate.
Hold on. So, because I picked you up before, and you live right off the outskirts of campus.
I do.
So where did you bike to?
I biked, around East Lansing, down to Lansing, and just around the Saginaw area a little bit. So
okay.
It was fun.
Oh, that is fantastic stuff. Well, Isaac, you are the man, 50 grand. I appreciate that. And we also, I'm looking here behind the glass. We have an exciting show because later on, again, as I previewed, we got Mark Snyder, Detroit Free Press beat writer for Michigan football and basketball. We also have a fantastic man who knows his stuff. Tom Shanahan is also in the building as well. This is going to be a great show, Isaac. So let's dive into it. I mean, you heard in our montage, of course, James McCann. I mean, just delivering just one of the more epic moments of the season. And can you believe, I mean, James McCann is a rookie here, Isaac. We're talking about a rookie. I say that again. And this is his second walk-off win. How crazy was that? Did you get a chance to see that?
I did. He's got that clutch gene now. Some people just have it. He's got it.
I'm telling you. And you know what? Before the James McCann walk-off, I mean, because this season has just been a season that if you are a Tigers fan and, you know, looking at the success that this squad has had in recent years, I mean, heck, even getting to a World Series against the New York Yankees back in 2012, you know, the Tigers have a certain expectation surrounded around this squad that's been present for quite some time. But I tell you what, Isaac, looking at how topsy-turvy this year has been so far, there are some concerns for this team. And I'm not booking this team to make a deep run in the postseason just because of what I've seen thus far. I'm only going on what I've seen. And again, we always give this preface before we start this conversation, and that being that a baseball season is so long that you want to sort of temper your emotions from making some outlandish statement that you know, all the team is in immense trouble right now, because you have so much baseball left to play. So you have to sort of just kind of temper those emotions, you know, evaluate what's going on and what needs to improve, and really just keep a hand on the pulse to see if that does improve over time. But right now, before the James McCann walk-off, the double in the eighth by Victor Martinez to drive in three runs to tie the game was really, that was the key. That really got the wheels turning there, and that was much needed. And Victor Martinez, I tell you what, health has also been another discussion that needs to be had with this squad, because we all know the Tigers have been going through such just an up and down, just come on, man, can you guys get healthy type of a year. And when they're healthy, though, they are a force to be reckoned with. Victor Martinez, I will say, Isaac, he looks pretty healthy. Knock on wood, all right? Knock on wood all day.
Yeah, he does. And what a return for V-Mart. The Tigers really missed him. You can tell that. Everybody can now play their natural positions with him fitting into the DH slot as well. So it's really a welcome return for the Tigers. But the other thing about the Tigers is, against the White Sox, they pulled out two close wins, one close loss. They're just playing a lot better than they were before, because the bats are working. Just this perseverance to battle through adversity. That's what they showed yesterday, because that's what this team's lacked in the past couple of years once in a while.
Right, right.
This time, looks like the Tigers might have it. And knock on wood, you know, whatever, not to make an outlandish statement, this could be a season-defining moment. It really could for the Tigers, because they were struggling. They're in third place in the Central.
Mm-hmm.
And now a walk-off homer against a decent team, against a pitcher who had allowed two hits through seven innings.
Right, right.
The Tigers are on a roll.
And right.
This could be a moment that they look back on and say, man, James McCann's walk-off, that defined our season.
Yeah, and I tell you what, a guy who didn't have the best game yesterday was David Price, who were used to seeing, you know, go out and just deliver. You know what? I think he gave up like four runs in six innings. Not really a great outing for him, but the Tigers got the win nonetheless. And you know what? During that montage, something that really stands out to me, Isaac, was when Mario Mpemba and Rod Allen are talking, and he mentions a statement that the Tigers have never won a game went down after the seventh inning. They were actually 0-30 before yesterday's game when it comes to comeback wins after the seventh inning. And, you know, that hopefully this is a moment where we can look back and say that was the moment when the Tigers really started to get it going. Because I tell you what, since April 21st, the Tigers have been disappointing, you know, frustrating, a losing team, 28-34, actually, below 500, 28-34 since April 21st. And, you know, a third-place team in the AL Central right now, and they didn't before yesterday look like a team that had any fervor or had any energy, you know, just had anything in the tank to say, okay, we're about to turn this thing around. You know, they looked like they were heading backwards pretty fast. So, you know, Victor Martinez does look like the Victor Martinez of old. He's healthy. He's strong. His importance, we all know that how important Victor Martinez is to that incredible lineup for the Tigers. They have Justin Verlander back, something that we talked about, Isaac, that, you know, having JV back, even though he doesn't look 100%, I'll say he looks like, you know, what, 75, 80 at best. But as he steadily gets healthy, I think that, you know, he'll start to play better baseball, hopefully. Also having Bruce Rondon also healthy, you know, which has the potential to really solidify the rotation. And that eighth inning. So we'll see. You know, health is big for the Tigers. Let's give them a chance to get healthy. But I also have to say this. I mean, you know, we can sit here and say, yeah, baseball is a long season. But another thing to monitor is that lead in the AL Central. Because, again, right now, the Tigers are 6.5 games in back of the Kansas City Royals, who have won 4 straight games. Last week was, what, around 3? The week before that was around 2. So as that, if that increases, and, you know, the Royals are winning games steadily while the Tigers are, you know, winning 2 here, losing 2 there, that can't happen if the Tigers want to compete. You got to pay close attention to that, because that lead, that 6.5 game lead that the Kansas City Royals have on the Detroit Tigers could steadily increase over time if they don't get it together.
Well, that's what I was about to say, Al. The lead atop the AL Central just keeps expanding and expanding. A couple weeks ago, we were like, they're up, you know, 3 or 4 games. It's not that bad. It's a deficit that can be overcome. Now it's at 6.5, and the Twins are 5.5 back. The Royals are just running away with this thing. Other divisions are so tightly contested, and this is actually the second largest deficit for any team in the entire major leagues that has to
right
between one and first. I mean, first and second. So the Tigers really have a lot to overcome. Not that they can't do it. We've seen stranger things happen, much stranger things. But it's a lead that I'm not sure if they can overcome with the way they've been playing. Yes, I hope this is a turning point someplace where you can look and say this is where they turn their season around. But the Royals don't need any turning around at all. They've just been playing great throughout the season, and I see them keeping it up. I think the Tigers have to hold for one of those wild card spots.
We'll see. I do think it's still a little bit early to say that, but I mean, hey, if it's still around that same deficit come August, then we can talk, and then we can start to – that panic meter rises a little bit. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's chat about this one, Isaac, for a second. You know, as I stated in our Quicken headliners, if you guys didn't hear, Tyus Battle. Now, on June 19th, and this – oh, boy, I hate to get on my soapbox once again. Let me temper my emotions right now, because this is why I hate recruiting, Isaac.
I know what you're going to say.
You know, I'm not even going to beat the horse to death today. You guys already know that when it comes to my view of recruiting, again, I hate it because you never know what a recruit is thinking. You never know what is going through the head of a young 17, 18, 19-year-old kid. Now, if you remember, on June 19th, 5-star guard Tyus Battle, who was ranked number 19 overall in the 2016 class, he decommitted from Michigan. At first, he said, yeah, I'm going, you know, maize and blue, yeah, going to Michigan. And then he's like, oh, hold on, let me back out of here. I haven't signed my national letter of intent, so technically I can still look around here. So he decommitted on June 19th. And for the first time since changing his mind and reopening those options, he finally explained his thought process. He said, quote, my whole family just wanted to look at other schools and other options. I still really like Michigan a lot. I'm just looking at other schools and other options. Now, again, you never know what's going through the head of a recruit. Right now, it looks as though, Isaac, and you have to kind of take yourself through this mindset here. You got this young kid. He's a heck of a basketball player. He's got schools left and right vying for his attention to be a part of their program. Why did he decommit? That's the big question here. And, you know, I think you got the answer in his comments, his most recent comments. His family. Because when you're that good and you have so many schools looking at you, and not to knock the Michigan basketball program, because I think John Beilein is one of the best college basketball coaches in the game today. Heck, he's gotten to a national championship game not too long ago when they played Louisville. He's a heck of a coach, heck of a program, and I really think that Michigan men's basketball, they are going to be very, very good and talented next year. But when you've got so many schools vying for your attention and you commit to a program, family comes out the woodworks. Not everyone's going to agree with your decision. Family, uncles, aunties, cousins. Well, what about this school? Hey, you could play for, you know, Jim Boeheim. Oh, you could go to Duke. Coach K. What about Coach K? Oh, Rick Pitino. I mean, you could, so many people are in your ear that I think the pressure becomes so much on a young kid that he's like, okay, maybe I need to rethink this whole thing. I think you got the answer right there. His family, especially, you know, recruits who are very close to their family, their family holds a lot of importance in their lives, and their word holds a lot of importance, and very much so. I mean, they're part of you know raising the kid, for goodness sake. So yeah, it definitely holds a lot of weight. But at the end of the day, the kid has to make the final decision here. I've always said that as well. So I think his family said, hold on, let's explore every other option here, and then we'll come back and say, okay, we're going to this school. That's exactly what happened here.
Al, both you and I are, well, you went, I go to Michigan State. But you're not going to make a mistake going to Michigan if you got a full ride.
Right,
you know,
right.
That's something that the kid should be able to make a decision for himself. It's not like he's choosing, I don't know, Lafayette, Central Coast, whatever, some unknown, unheard of school over this big-time national program. He's going to a big-time national program instead of a big-time national program. Mm-hmm. That's fine. He'll end up in the pros either way, more than likely, barring injury. So, no, this is not a bad choice. I wish the families would take a step back, let the kid make the main decision. Now, they should have an influence, mm-hmm. but not... They should not be the main deciding factor. What the kid feels when he visits a school should be the main factor. And the other problem I have with this is just the media coverage of recruiting in general. There's such pressure on these kids to make a commitment mm-hmm. before they sign their letter of intent. But then it's not a commitment. It's like if I commit to do something and don't show up, mm-hmm. that's going to be missing out. If I commit to a school, though, as a basketball recruit, and then decommit, there's no penalty, no reprimandation.
Right.
It's just you.
Because
decommit.
You haven't signed anything. Nothing's not there, that national letter of intent hasn't been signed yet. So yeah, you can do that.
Exactly. But why do we have to call it committing if they're not actually committing?
Right.
Let's
exactly.
Let's call it strongly leaning. And then once they sign the letter of intent, then you can say he committed.
Right.
But he didn't commit. Caleb Swanigan didn't commit. What they did was totally fine.
Yeah, and they call it what a verbal commitment. That's what they usually label. That's what they label it as. Yeah.
It's different, though. That term commitment needs to stop being spread and stretched to fill any sort of, I think I might want to go here.
Right. I agree. I'm right there with you, Isaac. And you know, another thing that stood out to me when he issued his statement finally is that he talks about the development of players. Nick Stauskas and Tim Hardaway Jr., who are in the NBA right now. That's the ultimate goal. When you're a big recruit like that, you want to get paid for what you do, and you want to do it as soon as possible if you're that good and can hang at that level. So, it tickled me that he mentioned, Nick Stauskas and Tim Hardaway Jr., because he's looking beyond his school, but also looking at which school can get me to the NBA quickest. I always think of the recruiters thinking about that, especially the big-time guys who probably could make that jump from high school to the league. Not all of them, but some can. And, again, I just think this Michigan basketball team is going to be so good. It's not like the kid. Who knows? I mean, because I watched this squad last year, Isaac, and even though their record wasn't great, they didn't make the NCAA tournament and so on and so forth, because of injuries to Caris LeVert and Derek Walton Jr., who I think are fantastic players, I mean, you saw guys that you didn't expect much out of stepping up and straight up balling. Aubrey Dawkins, Muhammad Abli Abdur Rahman. That's a mouthful, right? Mar for short. He came out of nowhere, balling out of control. Spike Albrick, how great was he at point guard for this team? A guy who never turns the ball over. I mean, those guys stepped up, and just imagine those guys, coupled with now Derek Walton Jr., a healthy Derek Walton Jr., and a healthy Caris LeVert. I mean, oh my goodness, this Michigan squad, I mean, John Beilein has to be licking his chops at what he could have next season. It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait when Michigan State plays Michigan for the first time on the hardwood. That's going to be an incredible game. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Folks, we've got a ton left for you here on the show. In just a moment, I'll be chatting with Mark Snyder. That's right, Detroit Free Press, Michigan football and basketball writer. You do not want to miss that. And also author Tom Shanahan is also in his house. You do not want to miss that. As well as we'll take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m., 517-355-9527. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870.
Hey, history.
Our beloved leader is no more.
I found I was standing there with tears streaming down my face.
Told by the people who were there.
This is where Saddam Hussein was found.
Actually, I was shocked with his appearance, looking like he was one of those cavemen.
Witness.
I saw some of these atrocities happen in front of my own eyes.
From the BBC.
The BBC on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, folks, if you want to call in and be a part of the discussion on today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Before we hit that first break, of course, we were discussing the recruiting hoopla concerning the Michigan football team and basketball team. More specifically, of course, we just finished up chatting about our thoughts on Tyus Battle exploring other options. Hey, who knows? He could be a Wolverine. We don't know. I mean, he's still mulling over that option. But to talk about all things maize and blue, we have the man, the myth, the legend, Mark Snyder, Detroit Free Press, Michigan football and basketball writer on the phone. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks a lot for joining me today. Now, first off, Mark, I want to start off our discussion by talking about and really just kind of going back in the past for a second. Let's take us back to December 29th and really kind of put in perspective how the attention on the Michigan football program has really propelled since the hiring of Jim Harbaugh.
Well, I think how's the attention changed?
Yeah. How's it grown? Because I mean, yeah, how is it intensified, I guess you can say? Because, I mean, you see Jim Harbaugh, I mean, HBO documentaries, you're on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I mean, the khaki pants the students are wearing. I mean, the atmosphere is just kind of through the roof right now.
Yeah, well, it's who he is. I mean, I think that he's a magnet for attention. He's a magnet for attention in the NFL. He's a magnet for attention. You know, at Stanford, I think things were a little understated, so he was kind of restricted in what he could do. But even there, you know, people always paid attention to him, what he had to say and what he was doing. And now he's basically has free reign at Michigan to do whatever he wants. He's able to mold this in terms of publicity, in terms of execution, into different things that he wants. And I think that that's how it goes.
So did you kind of expect this publicity to kind of go through the roof once Jim was hired?
Yeah, I don't think he has any desire to tamp it down. I mean, he doesn't necessarily want to do all these interviews, but I think that he understands this promotion, and that's recruiting. And he learned a lot from his first stint, you know, when he was in San Diego, and then especially when he was in Stanford, about how this game works. And I think he's putting it into execution now.
Now, Mark, I think with that attention comes, of course, naturally, high expectations, if you will. Because I feel as though, you know, with Jim, you know, this being his first season with the Michigan football program as the head coach, I feel like, you know, we've had callers here on the show that are expecting Jim to turn things around really quickly and for this upcoming year to be one of just lollipops and butterflies, okay? Is it realistic to believe that Jim can turn things around that quickly in his first season?
Nope, not at all. I think that this is a team, you know, that lacks, severely lacking in major talent. And that's how you win college football. And so as he builds up the talent base, then they'll be better. But to expect them to come out and, you know, suddenly be an 11-win team, I think is unrealistic, especially having Michigan State and Ohio State on the schedule and opening at Utah and, you know, playing a better Penn State team on the road. I mean, this is going to be a challenging season, and I don't think that he's expecting 10 or 11 wins, so I don't think the fans should be.
I know this is kind of putting you on the spot, Mark, but what is realistic?
I don't know what's realistic. I mean, I think realistic is probably improving a couple of games on the previous season. And I think that's always the situation with a new coach. So last year they were 5-7. If they win 7 or 8 games, I think that that's progress. I think that if they, you know, catch a couple of breaks and win 9, well, then, you know, then people should be pretty happy with that. I think this is a daunting schedule, and you have a new quarterback and you have a lot of holes on the roster. And I don't think you can, other than the linebackers, I don't think you can feel secure about any spot on the whole team. So I think that's really kind of an indictment on, you know, kind of where they are and what he has to do. I mean, maybe they're holding a lot back and he can get more out of them than Brady Hoke did, but we can only go by what we've seen.
Yeah, I agree. Now, Jim Harbaugh has been criticized for holding, Mark, 11 satellite camps in 7 states. But earlier this month, he fired back saying, quote, "In my America, you're allowed to cross state borders. That's the America I know." Now, you know, looking at the coaches, specifically the SEC conference, in the SEC conference, who have voiced their, you know, displeasure of this whole satellite camp conversation. I mean, you know, you got to think that the SEC conference does have a legitimate gripe with other conferences who are restricted. Am I right?
Well, I don't think they shouldn't have a gripe with other conferences. They should have a gripe with their own conference. They're
exactly.
The ones who made the rule. They're the ones who passed the rule, and they're the ones who have to live by the rule. And you know what? They had an opportunity this spring to change the rule, and they haven't done that yet. And maybe they will for next year, but for them to sit there and complain about it seems a little ridiculous. I think the most interesting thing to me in that conversation was the, was the part when you saw guys like Mark Richt talk. I mean, I understand what Saban's talking about and Gus Malzahn and stuff. People are about coming into their territory. But for Mark Richt to say, you know, from the Georgia coach to sit there and say that he doesn't want his staff to have to work harder and to work more days, I mean, that seems to me a bit much. I don't know if anyone's buying that.
Yeah, certainly. So what impact do you think, you know, Jim Harbaugh holding these satellite camps has made in the world of recruiting for the University of Michigan?
I think it's a significant impact because what they're doing is they're getting in front of people who wouldn't think of them otherwise. I don't think they're not going to be Alabama right away, you know, getting all 5 stars or USC or whatever like that, you know, in a heyday with Reggie Bush and et cetera. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they're building a base. I mean, they've gotten something like 14 commitments or something in this month alone, just in June, and that's when they did these camps. So, and a lot of the guys have been from the camps or seen them at somewhere, and I think that that's a big factor. I think that's a relevant situation. And but this is a long-term thing. It's not an immediate thing. These were not held so that they could, you know, grab a couple kids out of this year. I think that obviously that's the benefit of it. But, you know, a lot of the kids have been middle-of-the-road prospects, maybe a little bit upper level. But for the most part, you know, this is creating a base and creating an impact in other places, Alabama, Florida, Texas, California, places where there are players and Michigan does not have a major presence. That's what they want.
Mark Snyder of the Detroit Free Press. Of course, Detroit Free Press football and basketball beat writer. Now, I understand that Rashawn Gary, 5-star defensive tackle from New Jersey, I believe he visited Ann Arbor this weekend, really enjoyed himself. Is that right, Mark? Want to make sure I got that right.
I think he did, and I think he's been there before. So, I mean, that bodes well for Michigan. I know Alabama's in that race. They've done well with defensive tackles and put them in the NFL, so Michigan has to kind of prove that that's something they can do. But I think for Rashawn Gary, he's one of the obviously top 5 players in the country. Michigan has a tie. There's a number of New Jersey guys there, and they're building a more of a base in New Jersey. In the Big Ten, they play back in New Jersey, obviously. You know, they play there twice in his career in Rutgers.
Mm-hmm.
And Michigan, and his former coach at Paramus Catholic last year is on Michigan staff as the director of recruiting. So, you know, there's ties to Michigan. At the same time, though, you know, Michigan hasn't won. So Alabama has won. So I think that's something you'll look at in a place like that, too. So I don't think it's a lot by any means.
Yeah.
But there are reasons Michigan can get in with the top 5 kids.
Right. Yes, certainly. And, you know, 4-star wide receiver, also Brad Hawkins, also of New Jersey, will be making his decision, I believe, on Friday, in which Michigan is expected to be the front runner. Do you see him committing to Michigan?
I think that that's probably a decent chance. I think he liked Michigan. He's big on the New Jersey stuff, and I think there's opportunity there, especially at that position.
All right. Well, Mark, before we get you out of here, I want to bring up, of course, the Andre Pipkin story that actually broke the end of last week. Defensive lineman Andre Pipkin told actually ESPN that Michigan coach Jim Harbaugh, head athletic trainer Paul Schmidt, and associate athletic director Jim Minnick asked Pipkins about 10 times over a 2-month period to sign a medical scholarship form that would have ended his career with the Wolverines before he wanted to end. Now, a quick quote here from Pipkins, Mark. Quote, I feel I'm healthy and ready to play, said Pipkins, again, who played last season after he was cleared to return from a torn knee ligament. I don't want to sign the form. I wanted to play for my seniors and for the team. Coach Harbaugh said, I recommend you take the medical. Since the story has been released, has there been any comment from the program at all, Mark?
They're not going to comment. I mean, they have Harbaugh's statement. They're kind of standing by that. And I think that, I mean, they really can't get into this much, especially because it's medical situations and student privacy, you know, under the HIPAA law. They can only comment to a certain extent. I mean, I think they could talk in generalities, but I don't know that that would serve them. I think that, you know, look, we're getting really one side of this. I mean, Harbaugh made a statement, but for the most part, you know, we're getting Pipkin's side, and we're only getting what he wants to give.
Right.
You know, in terms of his medical history. I mean, there may be, you know, for Michigan to make this decision, there may be more to his medical history that we know. I mean, in there, he told Joe Schad from ESPN that he had two concussions. Did he have more than two concussions? I mean, is that something that's been a problem? You know, the tendency with concussions, especially in Michigan, after the hubbub over to the Shane Morris situation last year, it became a national story. I think they're very sensitive to that, so that may be a part of it. I think that there's, you know, there, in one of these situations, especially medical, and you get he said and you don't get the other side, it's we don't know what we don't know. So I hesitate to jump to conclusions on either side other than the fact to say that, you know, there's probably a lot we don't know about his medical history, and he doesn't necessarily, he's just sharing what he wants to share.
Right. And you know what, Mark, at the end of the day, though, I mean, if Andre, if it is what he's saying is true, at the end of the day, if you know, he was hurt, and, you know, Jim Harbaugh is telling him to take the medical. I mean, that ideally frees up our scholarship for him in that program, which at the end of the day could be useful for someone to get right there on the gridiron, you know, as opposed to, you know, having the scholarship just lay there and just really, you know, not have any playing time. I mean, there's the business aspect to this conversation as well, right?
Pipkins is a senior. It's what month is this? It's July, basically.
Yeah, July.
It's
yeah.
going to be July this week. I mean, he's going to play. This is the year he would play. They're not going to run out. Maybe they get a transfer at this point or something, but they're not going to run out and give that scholarship. It just means one of the walk-ons wouldn't get it, who might get it, who plays a lot. You know, I don't think at this point it's a one-year deal. I don't think that that's really a motivating factor in this situation. It may be with others, you know, that you could say that if a kid's a sophomore or there's a couple years of eligibility or whatever. But in this situation, I can't imagine that's really the driving factor.
All right, Mark, before we get you out of here, Tyus Battle, do you think he will be committing to U of M after decommitting, what I believe, last month?
I think you can just look at history of guys, and for the most part, it's very rare that players commit and then decommit and then recommit, especially in basketball. There's a reason the players decommit. It's because they're not satisfied with what they have. If they are satisfied, there's no reason to look around, or they can stay committed and then look around. But I think that it's a long shot. You know, obviously, he'd be a huge impact recruit in terms of visibility and in talent for John Beilein. But, you know, it's an uphill battle once you lose the recruit that already committed to you.
There you have it. Mark Snyder, Detroit Free Press football and basketball beat writer. Hey, Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll be chatting with Tom Shanahan, the author of Ray of Light. You do not want to miss that, folks. He's live right here in studio. We'll be right back. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Fantastic chat. Interesting chat, Isaac, with Mark Snyder of the Free Press. What do you think about this whole Andre Pickman story real quick?
Yeah, Al, I think it's a big story for a lot of different reasons. First off, U of M, of course, had the trouble last year with the whole Brady Hoke and not reporting the concussion.
Yeah, Shane Morris, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's a big deal to have a follow-up of something like that. However, like Mark said, we need to get all the details out there before we can really pass judgment.
Exactly. Can't speculate unless, you know, you hear both sides of the story. I certainly agree. All right, well, let's get to our second guest right here on WKAR's Current Sports. He is certainly a friend of the show. His name is Tom Shanahan, author of Ray of Light. Tom, first off, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing great. It's always fun to be back on campus, and thanks for having me on the show again.
Certainly, certainly. I'm always delighted to see you, man, and thanks a lot for coming in the studio. First off, I want to chat about, of course, Ray of Light. I remember when you were on the first time here on WKR's Current Sports. You were talking about the book. A really, really unbelievable read. Folks, if you have not read this book, you are not living, okay? It recounts, of course, the area of Duffy for the MSU football team. Of course, you know, Jimmy Ray. I mean, just an unbelievable story. I got to ask you, what's the success of the book been like since the last time we talked?
Well, we've done real well in Michigan. And then in May, we did a couple of book signings in Fayetteville, Jimmy Ray's hometown. And those went well. But for some reason, we can't break through nationally. Nobody has picked up on what a untold story this is about the integration of college football and how Michigan State led the way. And I don't know, I'm hoping ESPN will pick up on it with the 50th anniversary of the 65 championship. And then, of course, next year is even a bigger 50th anniversary with the 66th game of the century. But, yeah, it has me stumped. You'd think the Big Ten Network would do something. And then Jimmy Ray also went on, was a very influential coach, although he was never a head coach. He was one of the first black assistant coaches in the NFL. There were only three when he was hired by the 49ers in 77. Mm-hmm. He was one of the first black offensive coordinators with the Rams in 83. And then he's been a mentor to so many young black coaches, including Tony Dungy, who wrote the foreword to the book. So you'd think the NFL Network would do something on Jimmy's pioneering role and how he had to overcome so much and never got a fair chance to be a head coach. And so I think that's kind of embarrassing. The NFL Network hasn't done anything.
Well, I tell you what, I'm sure patience is certainly a virtue, and that's something you live by. So it's still early. I'm really hoping they do, and I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will, because it's really a compelling story. And for our listeners, especially our younger listeners out there, Tom, for those that don't know about the story and how really the Michigan State football program were a pioneer in breaking that color barrier and allowing, you know, African Americans, countless African Americans, to come through their program and play on the gridiron. Can you sort of give a synopsis of what this book is about?
Well, Michigan State always had a history of playing black athletes, more black athletes than most schools, but they were players from Detroit and Flint and Saginaw that were some of their great players. And the black high school coaches and black athletes in the South noticed this, that Michigan State gave black athletes a chance. Mm-hmm. And Duffy, once he became a prominent national figure in the late 50s and gave clinics around the country, he went to Atlanta and put on a clinic, and he was upset. He was invited there, and he was upset that the black high school coaches weren't allowed to attend. And so he, on his own, put on his own clinic just for the high school coaches, the black high school coaches, because he just loved that fraternity of coaches and he enjoyed clinics. And eventually the black high school coaches down that way began to trust Duffy. And they started sending their players to him. They already knew Michigan State's history. And, you know, these guys turned out to be George Webster, Bubba Smith.
Yeah.
Bubba's father was a very good high school coach in Beaumont, Texas, the Houston area. I think he won 250 career games, and he steered Bubba to Duffy. And there was just a lot of trust involved. And then one of the things I wanted to learn from the book is a lot of people think Duffy just recruited a handful of black players from the segregated South to win games. You know, the All-Americans, Bubba and Gene Washington and George Webster.
Right.
So when I did my research, I wanted to find out how many black players from the South Duffy recruited. The first one was in 1959 from Pine Bluff, Arkansas, Clifton Rofe, and then it went through 1972, his last season. He had 44 players. And so obviously there weren't 44 All-Americans. But a lot of those guys who weren't stars, there was a 68% graduation rate, which was very high from that time, because
right,
they didn't have the academic support and NCAA rules that they have now. And a lot of those guys were just grateful to escape the South and get an education. And it was a generational change for their families. Clifton Rofe, the very first Underground Railroad passenger, didn't play, but he went on and was a dentist for 40 years. Mm. His daughter is a professor at Northern Arizona. Where would she be if her father didn't get a chance to get a college degree at Michigan State?
Yeah.
And then his son is, by the way, Willie Rofe, college and pro football Hall of Famer.
My goodness.
Think he would have made it anyways. But, you know, all these players, Ernie Pastore, who still lives in the Michigan State area, his daughter taught law at Michigan State, and his son is a West Point graduate. Gene Washington's daughters are successful. It just goes on and on.
Yeah, certainly. You know, we actually had George Washington on the show, Gene Washington on the show not too long ago to, you know, talk about his time as a player here. And, of course, his daughter Maya, they've linked up and they're creating this unbelievable documentary called Through the Banks of the Red Cedar. Sort of just talking about that era, the era that you just so eloquently talked about just now here at the Michigan State football program. And one of the things I really found interesting is when I was talking with Gene about his experience coming from the South to here at Michigan State, was that his experience here at MSU was really quite pleasant. I mean, really no quarrels or quandaries or anything like that. I'm curious to know, do the other players that you talk about in this book, do they echo those sentiments? And how was it, you know, if it wasn't like that here on campus, when they went on the road to play a game somewhere else, did that experience change for them?
Yeah, that was a very interesting thing for me to learn is Gene Washington talked about how he stayed up here in the summer. He didn't want to go back to Texas and be a part of the segregation. Mm-hmm. George Webster said that he had never known black students and white students to go to school together and get along so well until he came to Michigan State. Charlie Thornhill from Roanoke, Virginia, said he never trusted a white person until he came to Michigan State. And it was a very welcoming environment, and that started with President John Hanna on down because he was also hiring black faculty members. He was way ahead of the curve on integration. And whereas Ohio State, Michigan, and all these other Big Ten schools had black players, they only had three or four. So it's not like John Hanna ever told Duffy when he had his chance to tap into the South, well, you can bring up a couple, but don't bring up too many. I mean, Duffy had carte blanche to do whatever he wanted recruiting. It didn't matter where they were from, what color they were. And Clinton Jones called it an oasis. And in fact, one good story about Clinton Jones told, this is when he went into the Michigan State Hall of Fame in 2012. And he was asked by one of the reporters at the press conference. I was there for that. Well, you know, everything worked out great football, but what about the rest of the campus? And in the 60s, you wouldn't be surprised to learn that black students weren't treated well. And he asked Clint, what about any examples of racism off a football field? And Clint Jones said, none. He said,
wow.
It was a great experience here. And then Clint said, well, I take that back because he was Mr. MSU.
Yeah. I think during homecoming, right?
Yeah. Right. Which came as a big surprise to him. He's the first black student named Mr. MSU. And at the tradition back then at the homecoming dances, the homecoming king and queen would dance, and it was a white woman, and she wouldn't dance with Clint.
Yeah, I remember him telling me that story. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKR's Current Sports, we are talking with Tom Shanahan, the author of Ray of Light, one unbelievable read. Tom, before we get you out of here, we only have 7 minutes left. For our listeners out there that want to get their hands on this wonderful piece of work, how can they do so?
Well, you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and you can get it straight from the publisher if you go on my website, and it's just ShanahanReport.com. Also, there are signed copies available at the MSU bookstore, and we're in the process of trying to set up a book signing for homecoming weekend because that's when Michigan State's going to honor the 50th anniversary of the 65 team. And we're going to have a new cover mentioning the 50th anniversary.
That is fantastic stuff. And I'll make sure after the show, when we post our show time, to put your information here. We'll put the website on there again, ShanahanReport.com. Also, you can follow Tom on Twitter at Shanny4055. Really quickly, Tom, before we hit our second break and put a bow on the show, what are your general thoughts on what Coach D'Antonio has done here? Two top five finishes, a Rose Bowl championship win, a Cotton Bowl championship win. I mean, remarkable stuff, right?
It's very remarkable, and it took a special person to do it to get out of the shadow of Ohio State and Michigan. I remember when I was a student and Daryl Rogers had been hired in 1976.
Right.
And being a student, I thought 1966 was ancient history, you know, the most recent national championship. And I said to Daryl, when I was working for the State News, I said, can you win a national championship here? Because it didn't seem like it was possible the way they had fallen behind Michigan and Ohio State. And he said, absolutely. And he said, because it's been done here before.
Right.
Well, no one else was able to put the pieces together until Mark D'Antonio.
There you have that remarkable stuff. Tom, always a pleasure. Thanks a lot for coming, all right?
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. All right, we got a quick caller here. We've got Mike from Saginaw on line one. Mike, how are you doing, brother?
How you doing, my man? How you been?
Good.
I just want to say, I don't know if you talked about the NBA draft, but did you think D'Angelo Russell was the number two player in the draft?
I tell you what, if I can't fault the Lakers with that pick, because I think what they're trying to do right now, Mike, in the mindset that they have is that Kobe Bryant, he doesn't have long to play. They're trying to look for, quote-unquote, their next Kobe. That's a tall order, I know, because you're talking about one of the greatest players to ever play. But with getting D'Angelo Russell, I tell you what, you can make a strong argument that he is the best player out of this year's class. I mean, he's got great court vision. He has a great jump shot. He plays fantastic defense. I had no problem with the Lakers taking D'Angelo Russell with that second pick. What about you, Isaac? Because I know you're a big NBA guy, too.
I agree, Al. I think D'Angelo Russell had just about more potential than anybody else because he's such a great passer, and he scored the most points per game of any freshman in the NCAA.
Right.
Hey, sounds good to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Hey, before I let you go and you wrap the program up, Draymond Green, they had a day up for him in Saginaw this Saturday.
Dre Day is what they called it. Dre Day out in Saginaw, yeah.
Yeah, they had a parade for him and everything, and he was on the city hall and telling about, you know, trying to inspire the folks that come to see him, and it was a pretty good day. It was really good day to honor Draymond Green, and that was really a good thing.
Did you attend it? Were you there, Mike?
You know what? I drove by there. I was busy with other things, but I made the point to go on down there and see the crowd and see what was going on. So
nice.
It was really good. It was well attended and everything.
I've heard good things. I've definitely heard good things.
Here's one more question before I let you go. Yeah. Brandon Dawson, is he officially now on the Clippers?
Yeah, I believe so. Yes, he is officially now on the Clippers. Isaac, give me a thumbs up as well. Yeah, he'll be playing, I'm sure, in the summer league and trying to earn a solidified roster spot. So, yeah, but right now I think, all systems are go as far as
Did Trice sign with somebody yet?
Yes, Travis Trice is playing. He signed with the Miami Heat. He will be playing on their summer league. And that, I believe, begins this weekend. And then he has a second session starting on July 10th.
Okay, then. All right, then. Thanks for talking to me, man. And you have a great holiday, okay?
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike. Always appreciate the call, brother.
All right, there. Thank
all right. Really briefly, Isaac, we got 3 minutes left in the show. Weekend winners. Let's not play the intro music. Let's just quickly give our weekend winners for the weekend where we recap the weekend that was in the sporting world. Who are your weekend winners, my man?
Well, Al, first off, I have no idea why it took so long to hit me, but us at Current Sports, because with all the decommitments and things, we helped recruit a 5-star recruit. Flip might have played this like 0.1% of his decision, I'm sure, but he stopped by and we got to talk to him. So
yes, Josh Langford did stop by. He was in our Current Sports radio studios, I think, what, 2 weeks ago?
And then
next thing you know, the next day, boom, he committed, and now he's quote-unquote a Spartan. He hasn't signed anything yet, but, yeah, he's saying, I'm committed to Tom Izzo's squad. So, yeah, that's pretty good. I like that. Mine would have to be, I'm a big, big, big fan of music. You guys know that. And I got a chance to sit back and watch the BET Awards last night. My weekend winner is the great Janet Jackson. Isaac, they had a tribute to Janet Jackson that will blow your socks off, all right? It will blow that wig of yours off, okay, my man? It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Sierra, actually, I mean, there was one point during her routine, I thought she was Janet Jackson for a minute. And, of course, you know, who also was there was Russell Wilson, who is her new boyfriend. Russell Wilson, of course, quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks. But fun stuff. It was fun watching that last night. Fun stuff. All right, folks, we've come to that point in the show where we have to say goodbye. Wow, what a show it was, huh? That's the way you start a week. Tom Shanahan, author of The Ray of Light. Gotta love that. Thanks a lot to Tom for joining me. Again, we'll put his information on our Facebook page, as well as I'll tweet out how you can get your hands on that fantastic book. Also, big thanks to Mark Snyder, Detroit Free Press football and basketball beat writer. Thanks a lot, Mark, for joining me. And, of course, to all of you out there for tuning in to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Monday. And be easy, people.